Welcome to the Start, Scale, Succeed podcast with me, your host, Nicole Higgins, the buyer and retail coach, sharing tips, advice, and insight from entrepreneurs that have just launched to multi-million pound business owners. We will be discussing the challenges they faced, advice they would give, and the milestones they achieved and how they got there. Also joining me will be a broad range of experts with some tips and practical how-tos, episodes that will help your business grow and to enable you to live the life you crave. The types of experts that you'll hear from will be those that you will find beneficial as you start and scale your business, from branding and social media experts to mindset coaches in PR and marketing. There will also be solo episodes from me discussing a variety of topics from sourcing to maximizing the profit in your business. The high street is changing and many stores are closing their doors. And who is opening? You know, bricks and mortar is a risk. But today I'm chatting with Kat Anderson, the founder of Train, who opened her amazing store a couple of years ago. And we are going to chat all about Kat's journey, how she got into retail and taking that leap and that risk into bricks and mortar. So Kat, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Now, tell me, what is Train?
So Train is a fashion retailer that is positioned towards the conscious shopper. So we value sustainability. We want our products to all be ethically made, and everything is also vegan. We're also really focused on style. So that's kind of the underlying value across everything that we do.
And you have a great tagline. What's your tagline?
A killer wardrobe without killing the planet.
Now, Kat, bricks and mortar is a risk. And we'll go a little bit more into the risk you took financially opening the store and renovating it, because it was a big job. And I've seen those videos on Instagram and it was a big job, but how did you get into retail? What's your retail background?
Yeah. So I have over 10 years experience in retail. I didn't do particularly well at school, and I sort of never really knew exactly what I wanted to do. So whenever people asked me, if we were at maybe family gatherings and adults would ask me, what are you going to do with yourself? It would overwhelm me completely. So one day a friend of mine said, listen, I've got a job and this store is opening in the city center and they're looking for people for part-time. Do you want to come like see if you could get a job with it? So I'm like, sure, whatever. So I go and have the interview, and I'm not kidding, in less than a couple of hours, I have this sort of, which sounds ridiculous, like eureka moment of like, I'm actually really good at this. I can do this. I feel fulfilled. I feel rewarded. And I'm getting positive reinforcement. I'm getting positive feedback being like, good job, Kat. That was a good, great idea to place that there. So very quickly, it was clear to me, I think this is where I'm going to have my career. And I think this is what I'm going to do, as you say. So that's really was my in for fashion retail. I've always worked in stores. I've always been on the front line. I've always worked with teams working from, so essentially a part-time sales associate role right up to general manager level, and being part of a lot of store openings.
And you were the person, because we've talked about this before, you were kind of the person that if a store wasn't performing, Kat came in.
That's right. And so they would often be called concern stores, which is very dark and gloomy and scary. But I kind of love that it was a really nice way to look at, rather than what's wrong with a store or what's not doing well, and just look at opportunities. So I was always trained, and I do this within Train as well, of looking to, because nothing's ever perfect. And in retail, everything's constantly moving, especially when you have a physical and a digital, because you quite literally don't know who's going to walk through the front door. So yes, I would often be looking at those stores and assessing kind of down to, what are the team wearing? How are we having conversations with the local in the community? As I've got experience both in from the UK and over in Asia, what might be traditional holidays that are going on. It really was fascinating, and there's nothing more rewarding than getting that big concern sign taken off your stockroom wall once you've managed to figure a few things out.
And so you were in Asia working with big brand retailers. Reese, I think, was one of the ones you mentioned to me before, and turning these stores around. What made you decide to come back to the UK?
So yeah, I spent 6 years in Asia working for Abercrombie & Fitch and also Reese and Hollister as well. And I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed my time. I think the biggest player for me was, well, it's two things. My values changed and how I sort of feel about things and my life, what I eat, how I was dressing. I got much more interested in sustainable living. I moved on to a plant-based diet, which once you get into that realm and are doing some interesting research, just a couple of questions pop up. Where are things made? By who? Where did it come from? Where are the materials from? So I started asking those questions. At the same time, I'm very much key in the door, you know, helping out my teams in the stores, and I'm still loving what I do. Then I start to question sort of, because I have a really strong work ethic. I love to work hard for someone as well as for myself. And it was sort of the value and the work questions just got closer and closer together. Should I try to find somewhere that I can maybe that aligns more with my values? It's not that long ago. It's only maybe about 6 or 7 years ago now, but I couldn't really, no one was really ticking the box across all of the areas for me to sort of take the leap to go to another company. So it then got me to thinking, oh, maybe I could make one. Maybe I could create the company that I will work in that does align with all of my values and can kind of be creating a space for people that feel the same way that I do, as well as anyone else that's still just interested in fashion, but might want to, if they had a choice, buy the slightly more sustainable option. So that's what took me the leap. I also have a very supportive partner that has always believed since the day he met me, why are you not running your own business? He's like, why are you not doing that? This is madness to me. The hours you put in and you're not doing this for yourself. So that was quite a helpful support network to have around.
100%. So you came back to the UK. Had you found the premises before you came back or not?
No. So quite literally, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, packed up shop and literally, and came back to the UK, unpacked my things and Googled pretty much how to, like, what's the checklist to write a business plan, start a business. There was no Treen. It didn't have a name. I knew that it would be connected to my values. I knew that it would be in my area of expertise in retail, but I didn't really know what it would be. And it was an interesting journey to go down because I knew the sort of dream goal would be, and the dream achievement would be what I have now. But I veered off thinking, well, what are sort of smaller versions that aren't so daunting that I could do? And maybe that would be my end goal. But after studying and just thinking up on what would be the right thing for me, it was, you know, take the biggest leap and you'll get the biggest reward. So I got cracking on the business plan.
And so how far, kind of in terms of time, the time that took in terms of writing your business plan to then finding the premises, what kind of time frame was that?
So it was about between 8 and 12 months. So I took a part-time job so I could do the in fashion, of course. So I could write my business plan alongside that. And then I, in sort of about 6 months after that, it was, right, we need to crack on. Where's the first pop-up space going to be? That was when ordering product, we got really down and dirty. Okay, money's in the bank now. We've got to go spend it. And that's when things started to heat up. And that feels like it was a week, the second half of that year. But yeah, so it was about 8 to 12 months.
And those startup costs, when you said money's in the bank, so you wrote the business plan to get a loan, was that right? To get a loan for the bank?
Used savings for myself and my partner. So we had 30K to start with. So that was the pot. And that's what we used to launch the business. That bought our first buy, our first season of spring, summer. And it gave us the cash flow for our branding, setting up the website and things like packaging and collateral, info cards, stuff like that, as well as the rent for 3 months for our first pop-up.
So you didn't have the, because I'm understanding all of this now. If you're listening and it's just like a chat of people having a conversation over a cup of tea. But so you started with a pop-up. I didn't realize that. So you started with a pop-up first and that gave you the validation to be like, yeah, we're onto a good thing. Or did you know before that? Did you, with the research that you did before that, were you like, this is definitely going to work? Or were you unsure?
Yeah. So we started with a 3 month pop-up. And I mean, I knew from the minute I put pen to paper for the business plan that I needed a physical presence. I don't think I would have been able to connect as much with my business because it was so much of my previous career. And I knew that for what we were selling, the sustainable products, the quality of the brands that we had in the store, to touch them is almost an instant conversion. And having a fitting room, and not only a lot of nowadays a lack of human interaction, I was really keen to have as much like community driver, a space that we can have photo shoots, we can have events, we can have workshops, we can have people to rent the space, things like that. It was really important to me. I will say, however, my partner, who is a financial advisor and accountant, was like, well, we'll see about that. Let's just see how the first pop-up goes and then we'll figure that out. And I'm saying, I'm funnily enough, our pop-up was on the same street as the flagship that we are now in. So really it was a story of from pop-up to flagship. Mm-hmm. In less than 6 months, which was exciting to do at the time. And I pointed at that store. I said, that's the one. I'm going to get that shop. And by some sort of weird strike of fate, the person that I'd got to know, I made an effort of getting to know everyone on our street before we moved in. I wanted them to not only be potential customers, but that we would scratch each other's backs and be there for each other. And they said, it's very private at the moment, but we are moving into another premises. And, you know, we've got to know you and we've really liked what your business does. And it's been fun to hang out. Would you be happy if we personally recommended you to the landlord for the space? And it was like, you think I'm turning that down? Oh. Absolutely not. So it was like, spit and shake on it right now. I'll take it. And that was that.
And you had a big renovation to do in that shop, didn't you, before you moved into it? Talk to me a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could have moved in as it was, and we found like there was a lot of kind of cracks and different things going on with the electrics. So there was a moment I didn't really realize in hindsight, now that I look at it, what the tradespeople meant when they said, so we're going for a full strip and fit. And now that just rolls off the tongue. So they were like, you know what that means? I'm like, yeah, it sounds cool and bold. Like, let's do it. Because we were already
and then you get the bill for the strip and fit.
Well, that's it. I said, how much does that cost? They're like, we're way past that, love. So basically we were having to redo things with, like, for the fire emergency electrics, we were having to redo all of the electrics in the roof and into the walls. So it kind of made sense. So we were having to redo a lot of the electrics in the ceiling and in the walls. It was then we didn't launch with menswear. So I knew I wanted that somewhere down the line in the next year to 2 years. So we had to do some part renovations in the basement. And it just made sense. We were at this time, just to bring back to the timeline, we were renovating in the thick of COVID. So we weren't open, we weren't trading. I think it was a leap of faith already, but it was an even bigger leap that, I mean, are we even gonna reopen? When is that? And it was hard to even get our hands on the amount of plaster that we needed for the walls. But I knew that I had a vision, and I had that 3 months that we'd had in our pop-up where we'd connected with a number of customers, not only physically, but digitally as well, reinforcing, I love what you guys do. I love the messaging. Great that it was further down the line that we were hearing how product was performing. It's washing well. They're getting complimented on things a lot. And I know a lot of people say this. I feel I hear this on podcasts myself. But if you really do know in your gut, I think, like, if you are the brand and you know in your gut and the numbers are sort of explaining themselves, then it's worth the risk. It's worth the leap of faith. So that was the biggest driver for me behind making the store look like what it is today. And I guess just to add on to that, just that it's a beautiful, stunning space in a sustainable part of the industry. I feel a lot of those stores looked a little bit maybe worse for wear, or it was sort of seen more like Hessian Sack kind of vibe rather than like chic and effortless. And it doesn't matter if you're into sustainability or not, come on in. It doesn't matter if you don't know the difference between organic and conventional cotton, I'll share it with you in a polite way. Yeah. A huge focus of mine has always been on customer service, and I wanted a physical space that we could do that really well in and present it in a beautiful way.
I think you're right. I mean, because how many years, were you saying that's about 6 years ago? Oh, no, sure, it's COVID, so 2020. So we're talking four years ago. But for some people, when they think of sustainability, they might think of lentils and Hessian sack and, like you say, whereas you've created a space that is completely luxurious and but with sustainable at its root. And there's some great things that you've done. The impact report, which we'll talk about later, but like really living and breathing the values that you have and bringing them to life. What did you find your most challenging in those first couple of years?
A lot of things. I not knowing how to do things was a one that I'd sort of hadn't come up a lot for me before, because I've obviously worked in larger businesses. So you have an HR person you phone or email, you have a payroll person you phone or email. So this sort of, and I'm a very optimistic, positive, can-do person, but constantly being met by this like, well, who's going to do that? Oh, yes, of course, it's me. So I better carve out time for that whilst I'm also working at the shop all day and posting on social media and all the rest of it. So that was an interesting hurdle to overcome, of talking yourself into, you still can do these things too, but you're just going to have to learn how to do them and start from scratch. Of course, just learning how to run a business. You know, I think I knew how to open and get started and run a store. But all the other things that come with it, even like business rates on the store, a presentation we had to create for our landlord. I didn't even think of that. I just thought you could say, I want it, and they'd give it to you. Just all of this stuff, which will go down from my little history as like huge pinch me moments and experience things that I wouldn't change. And the last thing I would say was probably HR and finances. I have a lot more experience in HR than I do finances, but to be doing it with no advice and it just being yourself, like contracts, things that kind of have to be right, that was a big challenge at the beginning. However, the effort putting it in then, it definitely has helped me down the line.
And what are you finding? Because I mean, retail is difficult. You are hearing of people closing and that kind of thing. What would you say has been the most challenging for the last 6 months for you?
I would say the coming off the back of the COVID period and then into Brexit period, and now we're into cost of living. So it's a hard one to describe, but almost this like relentless, there's always something else going on that I hadn't predicted would come up when I launched the business. I do believe if had I known these things would be happening, I do believe I would still be, I still would have gone ahead and done it. It just might have been done in a slightly different way. But I'd say the cost of living that's going on, trying to navigate to what exactly are people needing now, what's more important to them. If they're not willing to give up a coffee trip, but they might be wanting to give up a subscription. It does work well for us in a sense, because we've always been very purpose-led and our pieces are, you know, they're backed by, they're made well, they're made by people who are cared for, and they're made by strong, sustainable materials. But it has been really interesting just to get our heads around, okay, so it's not just new arrivals and look at this cute shirt that we've got in. It's not enough, plus with customer service. So it's really digging deeper into what are our customers looking for, which for me has brought up a lot of dreams that I've wanted to do earlier on that I'm now going to focus on for 2024. For example, like our impact report that you mentioned, and setting up more workshops, leading with a bit more of community.
And talk to me about your impact report. What is it and what made you decide to do it?
So our impact report, which often can be called that, or a sustainability report, is two parts. The first part is reporting on what we have done to date as a business. So how much we've donated to different charities, what energy providers that we use, how much CO2 emissions we've saved on traveling in alternative ways for things like buying trips. And the second part of it is what we will do. So it's publicly announcing what we will do for 2024 in our goals, such as launching 8 repair workshops in the year, which should hopefully help people repair something they already have rather than buying something new. That's our impact report.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned about navigating the challenges. How are you navigating those? You know, like you say, something has come up and will probably continue to always, there'll always be a hurdle to jump over. How have you navigated them to keep you going through?
Yeah. So in terms of navigating the challenges, we've really doubled down on, and it is similar to when I think about it, to how we behaved early on once we'd gone into lockdown, of doubling down on the community. So really, really asking myself, what does our community want and need? So for us, that looked like, as much as we love all our new arrivals and the product we have, ultimately, the gift I think we can provide is how to style them. So we really pushed back on that. So how to style pieces, which of course goes into the messaging of sustainability. I'm not buying one of everything in the shop. Nobody is. So it's, if you already have something similar to this at home, how could you be wearing it? So really thinking about that, we've talked a lot about it as a team, this inspiring people. And in the store, it looks like become a stylist for every person who walks through the door. It shouldn't just be the sort of VIP, I'm going to be buying 100 different things. It's for, even if it's just for a simple white singlet to go under a blazer, we are going to go above and beyond to help you with that. So that's been one piece. And other than that, the community driver around things we can do in our physical store. So we have lots of workshops lined up that we'll announce later on in March. We have like speakers coming into the store. So it's particularly been really fun for me as the founder to just step back and think, okay, we have all these challenges going on. I mean, this is old news at this point. It's been years, maybe 6 months into COVID, I would have been like, okay, what can we do? But now it's like, okay, seriously, this is just obviously part and parcel of running a business. So, and I'm glad to be getting the experience. It definitely has made me think what using the tools that we already have, like the store, the website, our Instagram, the great people that work in our business, how can we elevate what we already do if we weren't just simply being like, buy this top? How about you buy this top? It's like, what else can we be doing? And actually, it's the most exciting thing, you know, planning events and thinking of cool ideas that people might want to, who they might want to come and listen to, what they might want to get repaired. It's been a really enjoyable experience for me to be planning out the calendar.
Are you ready to scale your e-commerce store? Want to do it without having to wear yet another hat and become a digital marketing expert? This episode is brought to you by Neon Digital Clicks, the paid traffic partner for family and women's e-commerce brands wanting to scale their stores from five-figure to six-figure months using Meta, Google, and Klaviyo marketing services. Neon is offering listeners a free scaling audit worth £3,000. So whether your sales have plateaued or you're looking for growth, this is a great opportunity to lift the lid on your business and identify where the opportunities are hiding. Head to scaleandglow.com to discover just how much revenue you could scale your store to this year.
I think it's really key bringing that experience, giving your customers and your community that experience. But, and you're doing, I can see that you're doing things online as well as offline, but bringing all that together, because retail has to be more than what it used to be. Do you know what I mean? It's, if I think if you're, like you say, if you're just relying on buy that pretty top, you know, and you're not going above and beyond on the customer service, on building a community, on becoming something bigger than just retail, I think it's really difficult if you're not, you know, if you're relying on, oh, we always did this, let's keep on going and doing that, then it's not, you know, things are doubly difficult then for you.
I couldn't agree more. And it does bring me back to how I felt not only setting up the pop-up, but particularly going into the permanent flagship store that we have now. Of, it's just so important to create that landscape and the driver being experiential retail. So we also talk a lot about in Treen the five senses. How are you hitting all of those? And not only more than that. So how can it be this? It's just, it's a cool place to spend time and hang out with your community. It's really, really important. And I would say it would be my advice to anybody looking to open a bricks and mortar to, you know, put the energy. It doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to be a huge cost, but you definitely put the time and make sure you've got the inspiration and that you're excited about the space, because so much more can come off the back of that. And relationships can be born. We've had plenty of people that wanted to use the store for photo shoots, and then we've ended up stocking their products. And all of that is an exciting space for our customers to follow along with.
And what do you think people would be surprised to hear or know about the brand?
I mean, one thing that comes to mind is that we've so far bootstrapped our way to where we are at right now, which I don't celebrate as much as I should do, but I feel like quite often people come in, especially to the store, and they say, okay, so this is one of many, and where are your other stores? And I'm like, okay. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's the biggest compliment in the world. And I hope one day to be saying, yes, this is one of X many, and our other ones are here and here. And that obviously goes back to the experiential point of, it's definitely a good compliment for what the space is like. I would say on top of that, like pre-loved and secondhand element is something that I'm really going to be putting a lot of my time and energy into developing into the business. Hopefully a little bit this year, but definitely into next year. It is so true to who I am as an individual and my values. And I'm often, there's a bit of a contradiction on not, we are obviously selling, I believe in everything we sell, and we sell sustainable, ethically made goods, but there is this element of it is new. So I'm kind of constantly, it's this, how do we balance this for us, the sort of perfect sustainable wardrobe, whatever that looks like, to have a mixture of the two. So I'm excited to explore that.
And what's your criteria? So when you're looking at brands, what's the criteria that you have before you stock them?
So we actually have a code of conduct that I created quite early on in our first year, because I was, it kind of depended what mood I was in on the day of what questions I'm remembering to ask the different brands that we would connect with. And don't get me wrong, there are some that we've begun to work with, and then it hasn't worked out because certain things have come up from their production line that maybe were a little bit hidden in the buying process. So we have our code of conduct that is essentially just a list of 20 questions you can view on our website in our impact report. Everything from where materials are sourced to how the materials are traveled to the manufacturer, as well as how they send the delivery to us and who makes the clothes. So those are all the things that we're looking for. We often push back on like weights and qualities of fabrics. Is it timeless enough? Because there might be this beautiful wacky print item that is just gorgeous for 1 year, but it's not going to last a lifetime. And I don't think someone's going to wear it 30 wears. So it's quite extensive, I would say, but it's definitely worthwhile. And we're pretty open with our community about this side of things. We take a lot of behind the scenes content on our buying trips, and we share a lot of this in our blogs for our community. So I think it helps gain a lot of trust with the customer and our community so that they can really come in and just shop at ease. They're not needing to ask all of those questions because we've done all the work for them.
All the work for them, which is amazing. I don't think there's many brands that and retailers that I know of that go into that level of detail and that investigative work to be like, we want to be able to 100% stand by what we're talking about, selling and everything. And, you know, and not definitely not be accused of like greenwashing or anything like that.
Yeah, I just think it's not enough anymore. And this is kudos to the customer today. Everyone is so much more savvy than they've ever been. You can basically research and find out any information that you want. It's not enough that something's just pretty or that it's just nice to look at. There's got to be more, I believe anyway, there's got to be more behind it to sort of influence your buying decision. So happy to do the pre-work.
Yes, groundwork. And what keeps you up at night at the moment?
That's funny you should ask me that, because last week I was telling myself that it is the odd slow sales day. And it sounds so ridiculous, almost five years on. But if there's one, say we've had our best month ever, but there's been one slow sales day, it's like, but why? What did I do wrong? It's like, it gets personal. What happened? What could we have done differently? So I'm working on that. It's more about the month. It's about the quarter. It's not about the single day. And I think in general in retail, and I knew this going in, but it's definitely different when it's your own brainchild, when it's your own thing, just the peaks and troughs of retail. Like you can have you don't know who you're going to meet. You don't know what email you're going to get. You don't know what the weather is going to be like. There's so many external circumstances that can, especially for physical and online, can have an impact. That can have an impact on a day and a week.
And how do you, because it is hard when you, and I know that you have a team that works with you as well, but when you are spinning all the plates, how do you stay motivated, stay positive? Because you are a very positive person. You are very optimistic. You know, how do you stay that way? How do you kind of, when things are a little bit difficult, how do you pull yourself out of that?
I like to... This is a good question, Nicole. What's the answer?
It's the truth, whatever the truth is.
I know.
And you might say, I put my head under my pillow and
I scream. Do you know, we focus a few things. So we focus a lot on culture, intrigue. We do a lot of things as teams. So we'll take timeouts to just go hang out together. We have check-ins every 4 weeks. This is not directly as me as the founder, but it helps me a lot to know that my team are good and that they're in a good place. And that's one less thing to not be keeping me up at night, if that makes sense. So that sort of gives me a bit of relief of like, okay, they're good. Now I can like go back and focus on myself. I feel like my network around me is one of the reasons why I moved back from Asia to the UK was to have family and friends close by. Not only are they shoulders to cry on, but they're also just people that can say like, remember why you started this? Remember what you did on day one? And remind you, you don't celebrate enough. We should celebrate this. I'm lucky that I also have a partner that's also an entrepreneur and has set up his own thing. So it's useful to have that under one roof and someone you can just sort of vent to really when you've had a bad day, and also celebrate when you've had a good day. And my partner particularly understands the peaks and troughs. He's like, oh, okay, so we're on the roller coaster again. Here we go, we're in for the ride. Those are things that I like to do to stay positive. But genuinely, as corny as it might sound, if my community are good and I get that positive reinforcement, which particularly comes from having a physical space, it really, really, really does make my day. Just yesterday, someone commented on a styling blog we posted a couple of weeks ago and said that it helped them outfit for a trip that they were going on. And they purely popped into the shop because they said, I saw you were in. So I just wanted to come in and say, thank you so much. It was so useful. And I mean, that's going to make my day.
I know. It's funny, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people don't realize how much, as a person who owns a business, that feedback really, really means. You know, I get it when, if I'm getting something from the podcast, or I've helped someone do something that you've never met, or like, you know, and you with the styling blog. So for people that are listening, reach out and say that it's had an effect, or thank you, or whatever, because it really means so much. Because a lot of the time you think you're in this echo chamber and you don't, you know what I mean? Sometimes you don't get that feedback. And when you do, it's like, it is priceless.
I couldn't agree more. And it's receiving that has spurred me on to say, and even if you pass somebody's Instagram story and you think, God, that must have been a lot of effort. Like, that looks really cool. That photo shoot looked amazing. I love the results. Whatever it is, it has definitely made me make a lot of digital friends on Instagram that are also small business owners. And people like to spread love and be kind. So it not only makes you feel good, but it kind of sends it both ways. So yeah, send the message.
Yeah, send the love. Share the love. Send the love. Yeah. And what would you like to stop, start, and continue doing at the moment in the business?
So I'd like to stop caring so much about things like slow sale days. So I'd like to stop caring about those slow sale days, focus on the bigger picture, focus on the why, focus on the purpose. That is my big focus. I would like to start one of our goals from our impact report, which is a repair and care service and 8 workshops throughout the year, as well as a buyback scheme that we will have in the store. So we will be able to buy back your old Treen purchases for a gift card, and you can then sell it on to someone else who will love it if you're not wearing it. I would like to continue to be a purpose-driven business. So giving as much as we do to charity, if not more. If we grow, we can obviously be more involved in those areas. And I'd like to continue with the community side of things. It's been such a refreshing take towards the end of last year and the start of this year. And it's really given me a boost back into the business and why I do this. So I'd like to continue with that.
Amazing. And I have one or two last questions. One is, I'm always curious with what people's best return on investment has been. What has been your best return on investment?
1,000% the store, our physical store.
Yeah. And outside of that? Because I thought that's what you might say.
Yeah. Do you know what? And I learned this far too, well, I just learned this later on. I wish I'd known this at the beginning, is investing in myself, investing in like the learning of me. Well, that wasn't your question, was it? Investing in the learning of like my own learning and developing my skill set so that I can grow as quickly as I might be thinking the growth of the business is in my mind, and less relying on, I can't do that, so I need external help, trying to get my head around something first, and then I might need the external, or I might be able to do it in-house with my existing team.
Where do you think you've spent money unnecessarily in the business?
I would say it's all in areas that I'm not as confident and comfortable in. So for example, I'm very dyslexic. It doesn't come to me as naturally, but there are now a lot of tools like ChatGPT and AI that can assist a lot more with that. So receiving external help for projects that, once I've then sort of done the work for the individual to write them, I've found quite often I'm sort of already 90% of the way there. And ultimately, if the message is getting across, that's what's important, rather than like, it's absolutely crystal perfect. So I guess two things I've learned that, you know, obviously we want our output to be as perfect as possible, but ultimately it's the messaging that's the most important. And trying to trust myself more, that myself or our in-house team are probably more than capable of doing this, rather than jumping the gun and receiving help on press releases that are already costing a lot of money to maybe be posted in a magazine, as well as having someone assist you to pull it together. So I think maybe a slightly mixed message, but ultimately it's, I think, try to trust that you could probably do it in-house yourself first.
Taking a step back before jumping in with both feet and getting someone else to do it, kind of weighing it up, I suppose, in terms of the outcome, and knowing that 90% is good enough. It doesn't need to be 100%.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it's been a good learning curve for me.
Last question for you. Where would you like to see Treen in the next 12 months?
I would like to see Treen repairing more. I'd like to see Treen hosting multiple events and really expanding and having a super engaged community. And I'd maybe like to see Treen, I've got my fingers and toes crossed, having a second physical space in a different location so we can meet even more people and share how to have a sustainable wardrobe.
And where can people find you?
Everyone can find us online. So shoptreen.com is our website, and you can find us on Instagram. We love our styling reels. Message us with any of your style dilemmas at shoptreen_. And you can also find us at our physical store in Edinburgh in Stockbridge.
Which is a beautiful location. I haven't seen the physical store myself, but I have had little private video tours, and it is such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful space. So definitely go and check Treen out at all of those locations, online and offline, in person. Thank you so much, Kat, for joining me today, and it was lovely to chat with you.
Thank you so much for having me, Nicole.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Start, Scale, Succeed. If you've enjoyed today, I would love for you to leave a review, and I will see you again next week. If you'd like to hear more from me, your host, Nicole Higgins, you can follow me on Instagram at The Buying Retail Coach. Check out my website, www.buyingretailcoach.com, or find me on LinkedIn. All the links are below in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to my newsletter, The Step, for lots of helpful tips and advice.